ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 26, the second part of this purport. We'll chant the verse. Satyavratam Satyaparam Trisatyam Satyasya Yonim Nihitam Cha Satye Satyasya Satyam Rita Satya Netram Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapanna. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone and your instructions apply for everyone for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. So I think we stopped at this verse. Sakri Deva Prapannoyas. So Radha Gopinath Prabhu gave the class on the first part. We will continue after this verse. The demigods offered their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he had now appeared in the womb of his devotee Devaki to protect all the devotees harassed by Kamsa and his lieutenants. Thus the Lord acts as Satyavrata. The protection given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to the protection given by the demigods. It is said that Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but when Lord Ramchandra went to kill him, Lord Shiva could not give him protection. It's a very lengthy purport, almost 2.5 pages. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada and followed by many other demigods, had now invisibly appeared in the house of Kamsa. They began to pray for the Supreme Personality of Godhead in select prayers which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of devotional desires. The first words they spoke acclaimed that the Lord is true to his vow. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends upon this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. The demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill this vow. They were very glad that the Lord was appearing to fulfill his mission, and they addressed him as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth. Relative truth is not truth in all the three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. When there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. Devotees, therefore, following in the footsteps of Lord Brahma, pray, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Worshipping the Adipurusha, the Supreme Truth, Govinda. Everything, everywhere is performed in terms of three principles: jnana, bala, kriya, knowledge, strength and activity. In every field, if there is not full knowledge, full strength and full activity, an endeavor is never successful. Therefore, if one wants success in everything, one must be backed by these three principles. In the Vedas, the Shvetashtra Upanishad 6.8, there is a statement about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natat samascha vyadikascha drishyate parasya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate swabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to do anything personally, for he has such potencies that anything he wants done will be done perfectly well through the control of material nature. Swabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. Similarly, those who are engaged in the service of the Lord are not meant to struggle for existence. The devotees who are fully engaged in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, more than 10,000 men and women all over the world, have no steady or permanent occupation. Yet we actually see that they are maintained very opulently. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 9.22, Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhi yuktanam yogakshema mahamyaham. For those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I carry to them what they lack and preserve what they have. The devotees have no anxiety over what will happen next, where they will stay, or what they will eat, for everything is maintained and supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has promised, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Gita 9.31. From all angles of vision, therefore, in all circumstances, if one fully surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no question of one struggling for existence. In this connection, the commentary by Shripad Madhvacharya, who quotes from the Tantra Bhagavat, is very meaningful. Sat shabda uttamam bruyat anandantiti vaivadet yeti jnanam samuddishtam purnananda drishistataha atritvachatada danat satyatya chochate vibhu. No translation. Prabhupada just gave the words. Explain the word Satyasya Yonim. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna is the avatari, the origin of all incarnations. All incarnations are the absolute truth, yet the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the origin of all incarnations. Deepachireva hi dashantaram abhyupetya deepayate. Brahma Samhita 5.46. There may be many lamps, all equal in power, yet there is a first lamp, a second lamp, a third lamp, and so on. Similarly, there are many incarnations who are compared to lamps, but the first lamp, the original personality of Godhead, is Krishna. Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The demigods must offer worship in obedience to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one might argue that since the Supreme Godhead was within the womb of Devaki, he also was coming in a material body. Why then he should be worshipped? Why should one make a distinction between an ordinary living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead? These questions are answered in the following verses. Titled, The Prayers of the Demigods, Prayers by the Demigods. And so many times they have repeated the word Satya here. They first praise the Lord by saying that you never deviate from your vow. So in the second part, which we read today, we read about Krishna's vow. Krishna descends upon this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. It's not a philosophical way, but it is just common sense that there is something good and there is something bad. We need not assume that it requires superlative intelligence to call something good or, as we see, this is a terrible misconception, especially in the so-called Hindu mindset that everything is good. Why should we call something good or something bad? This is seen as a sign of being very broad-minded. So much so that what was originally the domain of highly evolved philosophers, very intelligent people, has now entered the minds of simple, not in the sense innocent, but people who have no qualification. But they are so attached to being called broad-minded it's almost like a fashion, it's almost like a how do you put it? When Srila Prabhupada began his society, he said, we will call our society the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And someone suggested, Swamiji, could you please change it to God Consciousness? That will appeal to many people. Many wouldn't think that, well, Krishna is a Hindu God. Go to any dictionary, go to any so-called philosophical book, and he said, look at the Oxford or Cambridge, they do mention the word Krishna, and after that is left to that person's speculation. The Hindu God, the Hindu personality who spoke the Bhagavad Gita, or even some goes so far as to say that the Gita is attributed to Krishna. That means actually it was somebody else's work, but he just spoke it. So, what is the meaning of broad-mindedness? Broad-minded mean not to take any personal favor or disfavor and let your ego be hurt. There are definitions of very strict and very broad-minded. What we see now is people don't want that Krishna should be pinpointed as here is the absolute truth. And precisely this is what Prabhupada did throughout. So in answer to this question, Prabhupada said, no, we are not interested in any God. There could be so many gods. We agree. Even you could be a particular demigod as far as a particular situation is concerned. I'll give a simple example. You have your table lamp and you're reading some book and you see a tiny, tiny insect crawling across your page. Sometimes you may think, should I squash him? No, I'll let him live. Now you assume a power which is beyond the comprehension of that particular insect. You take a pen and you put it in front of him. And then he just says, oh, a big obstacle has come my way. So he tries to turn left or turn right. Now just try to understand, within that tiny body there is a tiny brain. The tiny brain has motor functions, as they are called in medicine. Motor ability, the ability to go left or stop. Or sometimes I have seen when you just poke them, they feel as if they are dead. They make a show as if they are dead. So obviously if they are dead, you would leave them. Oh, he's dead anyway. But after some time, you just tap the page and they again start running. They know that this string didn't work. This fellow is too smart. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, you feel as if I can do anything to this living entity. I can kill him. Many times you might have done also, just by closing the book, he's dead. The next time you open it up, some dry carcass of some insect is, it's gone. Now, that's a demigod, kind of. That's how we understand how somebody can be controlling your life. Now, it is good that we feel that there is someone with whom I can behave like that. Wait a minute. What if for someone, I am like that insect? Now it gets hotter. Like I am walking on the road and there is some demigod in charge of lightning or something, and in case some wiring doesn't work properly and he just puts the switch on, that bolt comes on me. Whom I am going to ask for an explanation? That are you sure it was supposed to be me? Why me? Why not somebody else? So, in fact, the 14 worlds are arranged in such a way that you are a demigod for someone and someone is a demigod for you. As much you may feel that I control something, you should also understand I am also being controlled. So when we talk of the Supreme Lord, we are not talking of someone with just a little controlling ability. We are not talking of someone with a little extra power, education, a little extra merit, a little extra influence, a little more duration of life. No way! And funnily, the situation is such that philosophers today say there is no absolute truth, which is an absolute statement, by the way. When you say that there is no absolute truth, it means you have checked each and every corner of this universe and you have come to the conclusion. They may ask devotees, what gives you the right to say that Krishna is the absolute truth? So Prabhupada would say, what gives you the right to deny the existence of the absolute truth? Oh, we haven't seen it. Like today morning, we were listening to a conversation. In fact, I used to be scared if somebody said, I have not seen God, or challenged me, have you seen Krishna that you are his devotee or you are trying to be his devotee? What should I answer? If somebody says, have you seen Krishna? You are chanting his name for such a long time. Have you seen him? And there are some yoga students or yoga enthusiasts, not students of the classical path, but at least a little bit enthusiastic. So they come to Prabhupada and one of them blurts out this statement that, but we haven't seen Krishna. Surprisingly, Prabhupada seems to be like very happy that, oh, you walked in the trap. Prabhupada said, what is the value of your seeing? We don't deny that you can see. And simple example Prabhupada gives, you see the sun out there shining in the sky. How large is it? Any person will say, like this small girl over here, if you ask her, just go and see, check out the sun's size. So she may come and tell her mother, it's like the size of a small disc. She sees. If she writes that in her geography exam, she'll get zero, is it not? So what is the value of her seeing? So it is not a question of whether we can see Krishna or not. It's a question whether what is the value of our seeing. You may have some problem in your body. And your friend may check out your problem. And he may say it's all right. So you may say, oh, what do you mean all right? I am suffering. So then you go to a doctor. And he says, be careful. This could be the beginning of something worse. His seeing has value because his seeing has intelligence behind it. Take an x-ray and show it to somebody in the street and say, what do you feel? Then you may say, okay, if you want to see it, hold it upside, right side up. You're holding it upside down. If someone doesn't know even how to hold an x-ray, how can he give an opinion? This simple truth is lost. Why? Particularly because of this thing called Mayavad, which is a sort of a doctrine prevalent all over India. In fact, we can safely say that Mayavad is the default setting for any philosophical discussion or any philosophical understanding. You go in the common man street, says Atma so Paramatma, isn't it? Atma and Paramatma are one and the same. Well, if they're one and the same, why is one called Atma and one called Paramatma? To begin with, there are also a lot of other things. But why call one Param? If all ministers are equal, why call somebody Prime? Simple thing. So there has to be a difference. There has to be something good and something bad. It's not a sign of philosophical weakness that you say, this is not supreme and that is supreme. Of course, when one tries to belittle, when one tries to put something down, that's a different story. But for the sake of distinction, there has to be something which is proper and something is improper. One devotee was having an argument with some students, and they are saying that, isn't everything one in the ultimate sense? He said, please try to understand. If you are told, you write some poetry, and you write a piece of poem, and then you say, I insist this should be in the MA syllabus. For MA honors English syllabus, why don't put this poem? Because it's a poem. So you say, but why this poem? Because Shakespeare wrote poems and I wrote poem. So since poems is what you want, so this also is a poem. You may say, hey, now we are talking of quality. There is something called quality. It's not that just Shakespeare wrote poems. He wrote poems of exquisite beauty. The structure, the ideas, the plot, all these things, that gives them superiority. So if Krishna is also a living entity and I am also a living entity, then we are both the same. There stops the distinction. Krishna is the origin of all living entities. Everything comes from him. Whatever he does is perfect. Let us see how this material world is perfect. You may say, well, have you changed the philosophy? Suddenly you are saying the world is perfect. Let me give an example. If you go to a city and you are not requested, but you are interested in seeing the prison for some reason, and then there is official permission, and then you get inside and you expect to see high walls, searchlights, armed guards. Instead of that, you find people laughing like anything, ha ha ho ho, and somebody saying, well, I need more butter on my bread, and somebody says, you know, I don't like this soup, can I have another one? And then you have gardens and lawns, and somebody saying, heat the swimming pool, the water is a bit cold today. And somebody says, change the channel, I don't like pop music, I like more classical. And you might say, is this a prison? People are talking of food, people are talking of swimming, people are talking of, what happened? Are they some kind of high profile criminals, as we see some of them today? Why have your notions changed? Because you expect a prison to be a place of misery. Now, not that you should see people flayed or skinned alive or tortured or something like that, but you expect to see gloom and doom, and people are like, oh, I'm here for the next 14 years or, you know. I'm just talking common sense. So a prison means some place where your civil liberties have been taken away. That's what makes it a perfect prison. I'm not saying it's a good place. Good or bad is a different thing. But a prison means your liberties are taken away. So similarly, Krishna has made this material world and he calls this a prison. So why should there be questions as why there is misery in this world? Will you say, if misery is not in this world, where will it be? That? Or, another corollary to this question, why doesn't Krishna make a place which is full of happiness? He did. It already exists. No. My question is, why doesn't he make this place a place for happiness? It's kind of strange, isn't it? Like half you have some liberty and half you are under... Like in the morning there is a masseur who comes to massage you, and in the evening you get flayed or you get whipped. It's a bit irregular. A prison means it has to be a same kind of situation everywhere. Second point, then why Krishna created such a place? Why? I was talking with some architectural students. They're basically architects, but I asked them that if you have like 6 or 7 of you are under a team which is planning a new city, to build a new city, complete from scratch, how would you start? So we said, well, we'll have a railway line, railway track, railway station, hospitals, schools, residential areas, parks, health, hospitals. And I said, and a prison. Why a prison? Why be so pessimistic? Why not make that place so nice that no one feels like breaking the law? And if you don't make a prison in the first place, there'll be nobody who's a criminal. The people will not feel like committing crimes. I say, it doesn't work like that. In fact, you have to be ready with a prison even before somebody commits a crime. Yeah, it's a fact. Sometimes in some places where, you know, squeaky clean neighborhoods and there's a police station and the policeman looks like bored, there is no work for him. When slowly slums start growing and then so much of traffic and then little bit, finally that becomes like a hotbed of crime. That's what Bombay's experience is. So, Krishna doesn't want that this place should exist like a prison. Or he's helpless. Oh, what can I do? I can't prevent some of my own from becoming criminals. No. He's intelligent. He's super intelligent. He knows that some of my part and parcels, because I am fully independent, they have to be partially independent. There is no third way out. If somebody can say, why Krishna doesn't take away my independence? It doesn't work like that. You might freeze it. You might keep it inert. You might keep it inactive. But you can't destroy it. Because it belongs to Krishna. And you belong to Him. So much going roundabout just to make a statement that some people are pious and some are otherwise. If you don't like the word impious. But the fact is that these things do coexist. As time passes, pious or piety and impiety are on two different planetary systems. Miles, billions of miles apart. Further time passes, they might be on one planet. During Krishna's time, it was in one family. The nephew Krishna and his sworn enemy is his own uncle, Kamsa. And what was Krishna's fault? Sometimes think about it. What was Krishna's fault? So many times you find there is no logical answer as to why somebody is an enemy of Krishna. Kamsa may say, like if we try to go in the mind of Kamsa, I want to kill him because somebody said he was going to kill me. That's a good reason. You may say, okay, this person is going to kill me, so get him before he gets you. That's the law of the mafia. You get somebody before he gets you. All right, if Krishna doesn't get Kamsa, will Kamsa live forever? For that matter, will anyone live forever? This is common sense. How do you avoid death? You don't avoid death by some skin grafting or some tissue changing or some immortality injection or firing up your cells or whatever. Prabhupada's philosophy is simple. People think old age causes death. Oh, he's so old. The body became decrepit, he died. Disease causes death. Oh, he got that disease, therefore he died. Prabhupada says birth causes death. I say, what? Why did he die? Because he was born. He may say, come on. Birth is such a nice thing. Arrival of a new baby, you know, pitter-patter of small feet and delicate limbs and oh, so sweet. It's all right. That is one aspect of birth. But the turn the coin the other way and just there is death. So if you don't want disease, if you don't want old age, and if you don't want death, don't take birth. So you may say, but then everyone takes birth, isn't it? Krishna is taking birth here, just see. He came from the womb of Devaki. And she's like a helpless lady. So just see how difficult it is for Kamsa or Kamsa-like brains to understand. Just like we see that small insect, Kamsa sees Devaki like that. I can kill her anytime. It's within my power. Steadily, slowly and surely, Krishna turns the tide. Krishna doesn't need to do anything for his favor. Why? He has energies. This is the next point. Swabhaviki jnana bala kriya. Henry Ford, the great engineer who began the assembly line operations for making cars, some reporter tried to understand, this is typical American style, whether he's got a good education, whether he got some certificates, whether he came from a good school. And he came to know that there is nothing of that available. No record of him excelling in school or something like that. So he actually wrote a piece of reporting saying that he's not a well-schooled person. And Henry Ford got wild. So somebody asked him, there is a report in the paper saying that you could be a dropout or whatever. That's what they were hinting, that you know this fellow doesn't have good education. So Henry Ford was amazed. He said, gentlemen, please try to understand. In my office, I have a big console. It has so many buttons. I can press any button. You ask me any question. So he said, what do you mean any question? He said, any question. Physics, chemistry, biology, arithmetics, astronomy, zoology, botany, anything. So they said, well, right now you are saying that you didn't have good education. He said, that's the point I'm making. You may ask me any question, I just need to press a button and the world's leading authority on that subject will come crawling to my office and give me the answer. Why? Because he knows the payment I'll give him. So he asked them, should I be busying myself with this kind of knowledge or earn my money and get these Nobel Prize winning laureates at the beck and call? So they said, wow, makes sense. Isn't it? Why should you go through all the effort of learning material knowledge when you have the power to bring anyone? This is how Krishna works. Krishna doesn't need to do anything personally. It doesn't mean he's a fool himself, but he has some strong backup, you know. No, not like that. There's a slight difference. But the fact is, I just made a small chart here. If the living entity says, I know for certain, I'm confident, he's lying about anything. Because all that he has is borrowed knowledge. So, the living entity is sort of, that's his pastime, if we can call it. He wants to fake it that I am an expert on this subject. I know the best. I am the world's leading authority on something. Prabhupada was introduced, not personally, but told about one research scientist who spent four decades, 40 years researching a particular insect. And Prabhupada said, just look at the way material nature will work. What if after 40 years of research, you become the undisputed leader in that particular field of knowledge, and next life you become a beetle yourself? Now, is that what you want? All your trophies, all your certificates are there in the museum, and in the same museum you are the same insect. And someone tries to dissect you, is it find out what's inside? That's not cruelty, that's the law of nature. If you absorb your mind in something, your mind takes that particular form, already a mental form. So if your mind absorbs Krishna Seva, that's the form you get next time. So the living entity, when he says, I know, he's lying. When the living entity says, I don't know, I should honestly tell you, I know nothing. That's truth. Now he's speaking truth. So, upper part, he says, I know, is a lie. Lower part, I don't know, that's correct. What if Krishna says, I don't know? You may say, well, so far in your lecture, you are saying he has all knowledge, and if Krishna says, I don't know, if he says, I don't know, whom do I have to go for an answer? Like if you pray to Radha Gopinath, please make me a devotee, now, or as soon as possible, and you don't get an answer, what do we do? The answer is given by Vishwanatha Chakravarti. He says, when Krishna says, I don't know, that's his leela. Many people say, I have heard that before. You Hare Krishnas, whenever there is a... You can't corner the Hare Krishnas anywhere. You chase them through all three corners and they are in that particular corner, and then you bring them your trump card question and they say, that's leela. Gone. But Prabhus, that's how it is. Just like a normal person likes to have his pastime saying, I know everything, which is a lie basically, but he would like to be seen as people praising him. Krishna, for the sake of fun, for the sake of leela, for the sake of a pastime, actually enjoys thinking, what do I do now? Hey, I'm confused. He did this when in Aghasur, a big serpent, huge serpent, his upper lid, upper jaw, touched the skies. And his friends, the Sakhas, they were thinking, well, it's something like a Disneyland or SL World being opened in Vrindavan. They were knowing, we didn't see this before. This is something very new. We don't know what's inside. Who knows what may happen to us? Krishna is with us. Hare Krishna, let's go inside. And within a moment, he had put his tongue outside and Krishna saw his friends just merrily going, swallowed by Aghasur. Now this Aghasur normally, I just heard yesterday, was like a normal two-armed, two-legged human being kind of thing. This is a Mayavina. That's how Shukadeva Goswami describes these Asuras. Otherwise, they would stay in normal Mathura apartments, you know, given by Kamsa. Yeah, of course, they were all recruited by Kamsa. Shukadeva Goswami, when he describes Aghasur, Bakasur, Chanur, Mushtik, Shala, Toshala, Kuta, and all the Asuras of Krishna Leela as his friends, as Kamsa's friends, well, that's not the actual truth. Each one of them was beaten badly by Kamsa in an individual tournament. In a sense, you know how the mafias, they send a letter and say, I'll make him an offer which he cannot refuse. So this was something like that. Kamsa's offers cannot be refused. So they were all maintained very nicely, given all kinds of things to eat and enjoy. And then one by one, they were sent to Vrindavan. They were not told what happened to the previous one. Otherwise they might leave. Surprisingly, nobody even tuned into the radio or understood what's happening, you know. I mean, Putana killed, Trinavarta killed. At least they should have some kind of understanding that It's not just a small, tiny 6-7-year-old boy we are going to tackle here. But anyway, so when Aghasur came, Aghasur, the name demigods heard in the heavens, they got frightened. Such was his reputation. Sin personified. Agha is sin. So all the boys walk inside and Krishna is momentarily perplexed. Actually, he is perplexed. What do I do? Now when Krishna is perplexed, whom does he ask? He has no one to ask but himself. So what gives Krishna this kind of momentary, in computer language, even if this is, computer gets hanged, you know. It's a loop, thinking. That is one potency. The Leela potency, the potencies are so powerful, they are so powerful, they know exactly what he needs. Because they are his. One example, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj used to give, is one Maharaja of Mysore had 16-17 you know, antique vehicles, those old type Rolls Royce or Jaguar or Silver Ghost and all those kind of things. And he would come out of his palace and those 16 or 17 or whatever number, those chauffeurs would have to stand beside their vehicle. The boss has come out and he hasn't decided which one he should use. Because it's like, jo man kare wo, whatever takes my fancy. So he would go and the blue, the light blue, the pink, the silver, the pure black, all these people would be just standing and he would just enter into anyone. And if the driver asks, where should I go? He loses his job. He would sit. As soon as he sits, he would start the vehicle. The entire city is his own palace, his own domain. It's not like he cannot park somewhere, he cannot enter somewhere. Everything is his. After some time, with his baton, kings carry that small kind of thing, he would tap on his right shoulder. Take a right turn. Go on till there is a tap on the left shoulder. Now take a left turn. Now we may say, you know, Gaye Raja Maharaja, that day, those days are gone. Now these people could be autocrats, buffoons, idiots, people who actually fleeced their population, very unpopular with people. True. Why? They were imitating Krishna. This urge, if you ask someone, what do you want today? Let's see, I will just make some decision later. But when I make a decision, I want it at that time. Like let's say you go home and your mother who loves you very much says, what will you have, beta, today? She said, I'll tell you at lunchtime. She said, you won't get anything except a glass of water. If you want something, you have to give me proper time to prepare it. He would say, oh, all right. Why? Because you're not Krishna. When Krishna wants something, these potencies, they are so eager. First of all, they are very powerful. And they are so eager to bring everything right. Is this what you want? Well, let's see. This is what you want. So we can safely say that Krishna is sometimes like spoiled for choices. What should I do? In fact, when he is amazed that all his friends have entered the body of Aghasur, and when he thinks, what am I supposed to do? He is amazed at his potencies. My goodness, how marvelous they are. And of course, then he enters and expands and kills Aghasur. Krishna's friends, after this wonderful life-saving experience, they all think that, wow, it's magical. They don't try to analyze. So we come to the last point here. Prabhupada says, devotees should not struggle for existence. You may say, well, I don't like to struggle, but I have to. staying in Bombay is a struggle. You can't deny it. Prabhupada is making a point here. We don't need to. Inherently, we don't like struggle. Ask anyone, do you like to take this morning train from Virar, come to a jolly ride, come to Churchgate? No way. People who have taken flights day in, day out are saying, I'm bored to death with that. So whatever comes our fancy, whatever mankind says, oh, this is the next level of comfort. Do you find any airline advertisement showing travel weary passengers like ready to drop down dead? No, they always show, you know, healthy, fine looking people, you know, toasting or, you know, looking very fresh. Sometimes you see, you know, where are those passengers, you know, in the real airports? You don't see any one of them. Because struggling for existence is not our constitutional position. So what it is then? Prabhupada makes a point here. That's the last point of our discussion today. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to do anything personally, for He has such potencies that anything He wants done will be done perfectly well through the control of material nature. Similarly, those who are engaged in the service of the Lord are not meant to struggle. We may be struggling for some time, but at least make this one lifetime the last struggling chapter in our sojourn. After this chapter should be a chapter of enjoyment. If someone wants that, Prabhupada has started this movement for them. I was at Howrah station. We were gone for an advance party for our yatra. I saw one after another hefty looking people, you know, look really big, bulky people. And they were all from Maharashtra, they were talking in Marathi. So I asked someone, who are they? They said, this is the Maharashtra weightlifting team. They have come for some competition. And they brought their gear, and they brought their suitcases and their luggages, and one of them started shouting, Kuli, Kuli, Kuli. So I said, you people are weightlifters yourself. I mean, you can pile 3, 4. If someone can take one, you can be taking 6, 7 pieces at a time. 2 here, 2 here, and 3 on your top. But then I realized, it is shameful for them to carry their own luggage. Although it could be only 75, 80 kilograms, and they might aim for 80, 90, 210, whatever in the competition. There is glamour over there. You get prizes for lifting weights there. It is a shame to lift weights on the railway station. I'm just talking relative. I'm not for or against them. So the fact is, we are not meant to struggle in material existence. That we do is an embarrassment. So when we say, spiritual life is a struggle, oh, spiritual life is such a trap, oh, so I can't chant, or I can't read. We are not meant for any kind of struggle. We are meant to relish. But what do? With a diseased body, with a diseased mind, with a diseased ego, this could be, Prabhupada promised. I'm not saying that spiritual life will be no struggle. But what I'm promising you, and that's a pakka promise, this will be the last struggle. So, one enjoyment which sets off a chain reaction of a billion struggles, or one struggle which sets off a chain reaction of a never-ending life of eternity, bliss, and consciousness. The choice is ours. And the demigods are showing the way by pointing out, so many times they are saying, everybody wants the truth. Why do we read the newspapers? To buy something? No, we read the newspapers to learn the truth. How much of it we get is a point of debate, but at least we spend our hard-earned money for truth. This is how, in so many ways, they are describing that eternal truth is Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.